This is the Education Gadfly Show.
I mean, sure, you've got strong views that you've made clear on vouchers and things like that. Why don't you go work for, I don't know, Education Week and just pretend that you're just reporting on the news?
Yeah, the media is a little bit biased, Mike. I don't know if you knew that.
What does Gadfly say?
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me welcoming my co-host, the Valley Strauss of the Education Reform Movement, Michael Brickman.
Glad to be here.
You don't get the reference, do you? Valerie Strauss, who has been blogging for the Washington Post with a very strong anti-reform position, suddenly comes out of retirement to become a reporter the other day to do a front-page Washington Post story on Arnie Duncan and how he was pushing against Joshua Starr for the chancellor for New York City Public Schools. And it's kind of like, hey, Brickman, why don't you just become a reporter now, too? I mean, sure, you've got strong views that you've made clear on vouchers and things like that. Why don't you go work for, I don't know, Education Week and just pretend that you're just reporting on the news?
Yeah, the media is a little bit biased, Mike. I don't know if you knew that.
I know.
They've got a certain agenda that they push.
I know. That's such a conservative talking point there, Brickman. The mainstream media. No, but this was kind of interesting.
Lame stream.
I like it. I was either going to go with that or who's the guy that's now taken over for Dick Clark on the New Year's thing? What's the host? Ryan Seacrest. You have a little bit of a Ryan Seacrest thing going too, Brickman.
Yeah, I don't appreciate that.
Why not? He's a good looking
guy. Not for me.
All right. Well, fine. All right. Hey, a lot to talk about, including the new chancellor of New York City's public schools. So the debate here we've had today is, you know, clearly she's got that tilde in her name. I keep hearing her referred to as Carmen Farina, but really it should be Carmen Farina. Michelle, topic number one.
The selection of Carmen Farina as a new chancellor of New York City's public schools has been met fairly positively. But Mike, you have some reservations about her appointment. What are those?
Yeah. So, you know, she's announced the other day by new mayor de Blasio.
Who is this you're talking about, Mike?
Carmen Farina.
Okay.
The new chancellor of the New York City public schools. And what does she say? I mean, look, everybody says she's a great leader. She was a great teacher and principal. That's fine. I'm excited about that. She seems like, you know, a great woman. But I think she's totally anti-core knowledge and anti-teaching of knowledge. She says in her acceptance speech, she says that her father taught her that what was really important was thinking and that, you know, memorization, we memorize facts for tests, but what really matters is whether we can think. Well, if she had paid attention to the last 30 years of cognitive science, she would know that this is a false dichotomy, that the way that you develop these higher level thinking skills is by learning stuff, knowledge, and that if kids are going to learn how to read, particularly, especially poor kids who tend to come in with all kinds of vocabulary deficits, they need a coherent, content-rich curriculum like core knowledge. She is an unreconstructed, ed school, teacher's college progressive. This is not good for the children of New York City. What do you think, Brickman?
Well, I think we're proving your point right now because we're thinking that this is how you pronounce her name. We could have looked it up. We thought about looking it up before the podcast started, but we said, you know what? We think this is how it goes. So, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Let's throw facts out the window. Mm-hmm. We don't need research here. This is just a think tank. Think, not research.
Think. All right. Well, look.
But yeah, I mean, and it's a question really of how much of the agenda she can actually get done. I mean, the preschool thing, they need permission from Albany. A lot of the anti-accountability stuff they want to do, they need permission from probably Albany or the feds.
Yeah.
And so it's really a question of what they can actually get done. I think the teacher prep stuff they're talking about sounds interesting, but what is it actually going to look like?
Yeah. And, you know, of course, there's been a lot of talk in ed reform world about charter schools. Is he going to go after charter schools? Is he going to make Eva pay rent? Maybe, maybe not. But look, the charters have a constituency now. I mean, they've got a lot of parents, including a lot of poor parents who would be happy to go protest. I don't think that's what Mayor de Blasio, Mr. Liberal, wants. But I don't know who's going to protest if she starts pushing all this teachers college nonsense on the schools, which she did under Joel Klein 10 years ago, and it was not working well. And finally, Joel Klein came to understand that actually curriculum matters. Actually, you need to have kids, especially in elementary school, get a content-rich curriculum. Are we going to have to wait another 10 years for her to figure that out, that perhaps what you can make work in Park Slope with affluent kids from well-educated families, in fact, has been disastrous for poor kids? That's the evidence. I wish you would look at it. Okay, topic number two.
According to the No Child Left Behind Act, states were supposed to aim to get all their students to proficiency in reading and math by 2014. Did it happen?
Well, to be fair, Brickman, it is only January 2nd, 2014. And really, it's by the time they take the tests in, say, March or April. So we have a few more months to go. What do you think? Are we going to make
it? I think they got it.
You think it's in the bag?
Unlike you, Mike, I believe in the students of this country, yes. And I think they got it.
Good. Wow, I like it. Brickman, bring in the snark for the new year. By the way, Happy New Year, Brickman. Happy New Year, Michelle. All right, there we go. Look, this is a big date. I mean, I can't believe 2014. Boy, I remember. I'm old enough to remember being, in the Bush administration back there in 2001 when the law was passed, and then 2002, January 8th, when the president signed this bill. Ted Kennedy and the others, they went on a big victory tour. And 2014 seemed so far off. But the idea was, well, this is a whole generation of kids. We're going to have a whole 12 years to get to 100% proficiency in reading and math. Surely we can achieve that goal. Well, guess what? By any real measure of proficiency, we're not there. According to NAEP, we still have about a third of our kids at proficiency. We didn't make it. And we need to keep this in mind. You know, there's so much hubris in this field. People now want to talk about getting 100% of kids to college and career readiness. Guess what? It ain't going to happen. We need to set stretch goals, challenging goals, but not goals that are impossible to reach, at least without cheating and other things like that. What do you think, Brickman?
Yeah, I mean, these are political goals. It was always a political goal, I think. I don't think anybody, I mean, you were there. Tell me at the time if anybody thought we were really going to get to 100%.
Well, but they baked into the law, into the accountability system, a whole structure that was premised on that. Now, granted, they probably...
So you're saying politics sometimes make it into policy.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you're saying. Look, here's what I'm saying, Brickman. If you want to have the rhetoric, the political rhetoric, I understand. But don't then go all the way to bake it into the minutia of the law. Now, people will say, well, look, maybe they expected the law would be updated by 2007 or so. We were never going to get close to this place where actually everybody had to get 100% or close to it to the kids. But that didn't happen either. So here we are. We have this, crazy, this poorly written law in some ways. And then we have congressional gridlock. All that said, there still have been some gains. And as I wrote in my piece, that the kids who are now in 11th grade, who were about four when the law was passed, the first No Child Left Behind generation, are doing significantly better than their older siblings had done. So that's nothing to sneeze at. So don't sneeze at that.
Well, okay. The sneezes.
Topic number three.
Over the holiday season, it emerged that an error in DC's impact evaluation scores led to mistaken job evaluations for 44 teachers. Is this another nail in the coffin for teacher evaluation reform?
You know what I say to this, Brickman? Wah, 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 wah. Come on, mistakes happen. Big deal. No, I'm just kidding. But they're trying to make these teachers whole. They're going to, unfire the teacher they fired or something. They're going to try to make it right. But mistakes happen, right?
That's why we can't have nice things, Mike.
Why?
People keep screwing them up. No, but seriously, I mean, that is the point that people make. And they say, well, because of this gross incompetence at, the district level or whatever, whoever screwed this up, then we can't have a good teacher evaluation system. So we might as well just do the only fair and right thing and just go back to seniority-based layoffs.
Yeah, not evaluating teachers. Right. Because some drone at the Mathematica got the calculation wrong. Look, I have never been a big fan of these teacher evaluation systems, as people know, especially the ones coming from the state level. What I like about DC is it is local, because here we are in the District of Columbia.
Kind of. DC. Yeah, I mean, yes, technically it's a district level thing, but it's also DC where
there's no state.
Pretty much a state.
Yeah. But point is, look, if it was designed by local district officials, it is integrated into their other reform strategies. It's all part of a big piece, and the leadership's behind it, so they can make it work, and they have been very smart about trying to improve it over time, right? Versus these statewide systems that are forced upon local districts in lots of places, including districts that don't necessarily have a problem with teacher quality, and it's a big one-size-fits-all thing. I think we're lucky that this happened in D.C., and it didn't happen in a big statewide system, because at least in D.C., again, they kind of seem like they're on the ball, and they can say, hey, we messed up, we're going to fix it, and we're going to move forward. This would be, I think, a pretense in other states for ditching the whole thing. Actually, now that I think about it, maybe that's not so bad, because I actually wouldn't mind ditching the whole thing.
I don't know. I mean, I agree with you on local flexibility. I don't think that it matters so much who comes up with the system in the first place. Hawaii has one district also.
Yeah.
So, you know, that I think the state versus local thing, it's kind of semantics a little bit. But I don't know. I think you want to make sure that it's done right, obviously. And you want to make sure that you don't have incompetence in the people who are implementing this thing, and you can double check your numbers.
Hey, can we talk about errors and incompetence on another topic for a moment here? Okay. As you listeners may know, we came out with what I thought was—
Mike, I already got my annual evaluation.
You did. It's not about you, Brickman. We came out with what I thought was, frankly, a classic video at the end of 2013. What does the gadfly say? Right. And of course, it was a big joke. It was a lot of fun. But some people are taking it seriously, and including Diane Ravitch, who claimed that it looked like we were a bunch of, what did she call us, robots or zombies dancing around? Robots and zombies? Dude, what is she talking about, Brickman? We don't look at all like robots and zombies. She clearly does not have the cultural literacy to know that that was a spoof of What Does a Fox Say?
Maybe it was just maybe she thought it was Thriller. Maybe it's just out of date, you know?
That's true. Good call. All right, I like that. All right, that is all the time we got for Pardon the Gadfly. Now it's time for everyone's favorite Amber's Research Minute. Amber, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mike.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, 2014. Yeah. Woo-hoo.
Boy, this is tough. You know, it's January 2nd. You know, there's no grace period this time to kind of recover.
I know.
Did you have a wild and crazy New Year's
Eve? Wild and crazy playing marbles with my family.
Woo-hoo. Marbles?
We love marbles. You played marbles before?
It's kinda
really. It's kind of like Sorry, but it's cutthroat competitive.
Wow.
Like you send people back to the kitchen, which means you make it all the way around the board. Somebody lands on you, you go all the way back and you start all over again.
I like that.
Yeah. Woke up the next morning and my mother and her significant other had made big, huge signs that said winner.
Nice.
Me and my husband got to look at that all day. They were loving, rubbing it in that they were the marbles champions.
I love it.
Yes.
You know, I told Amber this already, Brickman, but you know, I had a Red State new holiday celebration this year. We went down to South Carolina and my 6-year-old fired a gun for the first time. And this just is driving all of my blue state friends totally crazy that this is not okay. But I got to say, he has decided he wants to live in a red state when he grows up because it's just so much more fun. You get to shoot guns. You get to drive 4-wheelers.
And the weather's nicer.
This is true. So it's, no complaints here.
Okay. What you got for us, Amber?
A new study called Reducing Student Mobility. This is from some researchers out of University of Wisconsin and Rice, sociologist types. And basically, we know that student turnover negatively impacts student achievement. It increases the likelihood of dropping out. There's spillover effects on the non-movers. So it's a bunch of bad stuff attached to student mobility. But the question has always been, can schools really do anything about it?
Right.
So this study seeks to answer that question. It randomly assigns, that's important, an intervention. I normally don't do intervention stuff, but this was a cool little study. Designed to build relationships among families and between families and school personnel. So parents are recruited in the program. They spend about 8 weeks in gatherings after school that last about 2 to 3 hours, followed by two years of monthly parent-led meetings where parents, kids, and school staff have meals together. They play bonding games. I don't know what that was exactly.
Like marbles.
And they engage in other family rituals. Again, not sure what that was, but anyway, that's what they're doing. They're bonding, okay? Yeah. 52 elementary schools in Phoenix and San Antonio, all with high proportions of Hispanic and poor kids, were randomly assigned to the treatment. Half got the intervention, half got the status quo. Data were collected over 3 years for first through third year, okay, first through third grade. And they were trying to determine whether the kids changed schools between them, okay? And as far as participation, 73% of families in the treatment schools attended at least one gathering, half attended multiple sessions. Of those who attended at all, a third completed the full program. So not too shabby in terms of participation. Analysts controlled for a variety of school and student variables, including the number of charter schools, which I thought was important in the vicinity. They found that on average, attending a school with the intervention did not reduce mobility, which just seems like a pattern with random assignment studies. You don't see any overall effects, but then when they drill down, you start to see impacts.
Okay.
Same case here. There were subgroup differences. Black students in the control schools were more likely to move overall, but when you looked at the intervention schools, that likelihood of moving between grade 1 and grade 3 was reduced by about 29%, but that percentage rose even more if you completed the entire program. And then they dug into the survey data, and it suggested that the intervention helped the black families to feel more socially connected to the Hispanic families who were the majority, which I thought was interesting, right? Because you see some racial tension sometimes between these various subgroups, and the program apparently ameliorated that. And so, I don't know. I just thought it was a neat intervention. Mm-hmm. It was over a long period of time. It was a random assignment study. It dug into some of the reasons why these things were occurring. And, you know, cool. I mean, can we get all parents to, like, hang out and bond after school for 2 years? You know, probably not. But, you know, hey, something actually moved the needle on whether we can do anything about student mobility.
Yeah. No, and look, this is critically important. We did a big study in Ohio last year, and it's just mind-boggling. In these low-income communities, just the degree of student mobility is just through the roof. And you understand it, that people are moving from different low-income housing units to others, that kids are moving around from their parents to their grandparents. I mean, these are places where there's just a lot of kind of, you know, lives are very fragile, right? And you might say dysfunctional or, you know, just anyways, a lot of things happening that are causing kids to move all over the place. And this is a big problem. I mean, if you're you get these schools that say, look, half the kids we start the year with aren't there at the end of the year. And you want to hold us accountable for raising achievement, which, of course, we should do. But it's hard when.
So if it's not a job, if it's not, you know, something external, if it really is, I'm dissatisfied with the school or I don't like these other parents or this community stinks or whatever, you know, if it's something like that, then okay, maybe an intervention like this actually, you know, has
promise. Even look, I mean, even if it just says, hey, I just got to make some effort, even if we move housing units or even if, you know, there's some change in our circumstances, I'm going to make the effort to, you know, keep sending my kid to that same school, even if we had to go a little bit further. You know, this has happened in the charter school world. There's some charter schools that have been able to be very sticky, that the kids keep moving around, but the parents still find a way to get them back to that charter school because it's been such a positive experience for
them. That's
so
right.
So it's like, you know, I mean, if all the schools are the same and are equally crappy, then, you know, why did you make the effort? You just send them to the next school they're closest to.
Right.
But if there is something special there, you feel connected. And like,
You know, the teachers, you know what I mean? Like, you can call up Miss Smith because you just had spaghetti dinner with her last Friday or whatever. You know what I mean? I mean, there's something to be said for those relationships. And I think sometimes we, you know, we kind of downplay that because it's the touchy-feely, non-measurable stuff. But it was measurable here. So cool.
All right. Excellent. All right. Well, we are off and running on 2014.
Woo-hoo.
I love it. Thank you so much. That is all the time we've got until next week.
I'm Michael Brickman.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.